Blog Talk Radio.
Party people, or shall I say bitches, whichever you prefer today on this lovely day. Got a packed show for you. Jimmy Carter is continuing to live up to his legacy as the best former president ever. He spoke to Oprah. I didn't even know Oprah was still doing interviews. I knew she had a channel. I had no clue she was still doing interviews. I guess she comes out of hibernation and the like. Talk to just the biggest of the biggest names. So Jimmy Carter sat down with Oprah and spoke a little bit about, I guess, his legacy and his life and all this stuff. And he brought up yet again the issue of money in politics, which is great to see somebody who was at one time the most powerful man in the world, not that long ago, kind of agreeing with the sentiment that people have been speaking about a lot today and the problem that we've been diagnosing. We also have some disastrous news about the escalation in Syria. This time it does not involve necessarily the Syrian regime versus the rebels, but now it's looking more and more like a proxy war, kind of, between the U.S. and Russia. You'll see what I mean. It's not good. It's almost like Washington is trying to determine how can we make the worst decision possible. How can we get deeper into shit and escalate further? So we'll discuss that. And Fox Business bashes the Pope nonstop because the Pope dares to not be a conservative prick on every single issue. So they have to attack. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It bothers me to even utter these words, but later on in today's show, I will be defending Marco Rubio. What the fuck? Is it backwards today? You'll see. You'll see why I'm defending him. I don't want to spoil too much of it now, but certain attacks against him are a little ridiculous, and I don't think you need to go this far and make shit up in order to attack him. There's plenty of stuff there that you can legitimately just attack. And what percentage of Iowa Republicans would want to ban Islam? Every time we talk about these Republican polls, whatever number you think it is, just fucking kick it up more. It's more than whatever the first thing you thought was, unless you really went high with it. But anyway, okay, let me stop and let's get started here with Jimmy Carter. I got my clip here all queued up. Let's do it. Jimmy Carter is continuing his streak of being the most honest and open and humanitarian former president. He spoke to Oprah recently, and again, he mentioned the number one issue in American politics today, which is corruption.
Would you be able to become president today?
Absolutely not. There's no way now for you to get the Democratic or Republican nomination without being able to raise $200 or $300 million or more. And I would not be inclined to do that, and I would not be capable of doing it. So we've become now an oligarchy instead of a democracy. And I think that's been the worst damage to the basic moral and ethical standards of America's political system that I've ever seen in my life.
100% right. And it's not me saying it. It's not some other progressive talk show host saying it. It's not some jackass who has no expertise giving their opinion. This is the former president of the United States of America, at one time the most powerful man on earth. And he's saying the way the system works now versus when I was in power is totally different now. I couldn't get elected in this climate. That's a stunning thing to hear from somebody who knows the ins and outs of all this stuff. Now, why is this so important? It's important because, now, he's spoken about this before, but it's important that he keeps bringing it up. because what he's shining a light on is something that other people have called, I think rightly, it's a good name for it, the money primary. It's not like all there is the primary, and then whoever wins the primary you get to the general election, and then it's Republican versus Democrat, and there we go, don't we have such a great functioning democracy. No, there's a primary before the primary, before the party primaries, and that primary is the money primary. And that's when you have all the different candidates go to the big money donors or to the lobbyists or to the corporations or to anybody who they have connections with, basically. And they say, okay, I need to raise X amount of money to even be in the game here, to even be considered, to even be looked at. And the problem is actually probably the worst for Congress and the Senate. When you get to the presidential level, there are some other factors in play, like you get some more free press than you would if you're running in a Senate race or if you're running for the House of Representatives. So it's slightly different when it comes to the presidency, but it's still bad across the board. Now, we have a guy like Bernie Sanders who he's handicapped in like 18 ways, and he's still finding a way to hang on and be part of the conversation. A lot of that has to do with the fact that there's very few other challengers to Hillary Clinton. That's one reason why he's kind of hanging on, and his name is still getting out there a little bit, despite the fact that he has much less money. But statistically speaking, what we're talking about here is a system where you are immensely handicapped if you don't have a certain amount of money. He's saying you need at least a couple hundred thousand dollars in order to run. Let me ask you, who's going to be able to raise a couple hundred thousand dollars? You know the answer to that question. The people who have connections to the people who can provide you with a couple hundred thousand dollars. If you're friends with that circuit, if you're in with that clique, well, you're going to be doing favors for those people. And to anybody who might say, well, this is all theory, this is all pie-in-the-sky liberal nonsense, you don't need to take my word for it. You don't need to take Jimmy Carter's word for it. All you have to do is go look at that Princeton study from 2014, which found that America is not a functioning democracy anymore. The middle class and the poor, we don't get what we want in terms of policy almost ever, whereas the donor class gets almost exactly what they want time and time again. So this is something that we have to keep in mind. This is something that we have to talk about. And we don't need to lay down and just take it any more than people who lived under Prohibition had to just take it or people in the segregated South had to just take it. It's a hard fight. It's going to take a long time, but it's a fight worth having. And I don't even think you need to be a diehard optimist to think that we can eventually win. There are ways to go around the rank corruption in the system. You know, you can get a constitutional amendment through the states. You don't need to go through Congress. So you don't need to go through the people who are benefiting the most from this screwed up system. You can go around those people. And then, as has happened in the past, when you get close enough, when you go around them, sometimes they fold and they say, okay, we'll do it anyway. Congress will pick it up because, you know, they want to pretend like they were on your side all along. So something to keep in mind, something to think about, and President Jimmy Carter deserves a hell of a lot of credit for doing what he's doing here. He doesn't have to do this, guys. He's got brain cancer, and he's sitting down with Oprah having a conversation here and talking about serious issues. He doesn't have to do this, but he's doing it. You know, he could pull a George W. Bush and sit in his room and paint dogs all day, but he's not doing that because he actually cares about the issues. He actually cares about the world. He's a humanitarian through and through, and you know, he's somebody who has integrity, and it's showing here yet again. And the fact that he keeps bringing it up means that a lot more people are going to keep talking about it, and it's nothing but noble. All right. So there's Jimmy Carter. Of course, needless to say, we all hope that he gets better. You know, it's weird, man. When I first read those articles, some of the articles said the prognosis isn't that bad. That, oh, it sounds bad, but it's actually not that bad because they called it at a fine time, yada, yada. But he's really up there in age, and the more up there you are in age, the worse, you know, you can fight these things off, the longer your recovery time is. And also, when you just read the plain face value of it, when they said, oh, he has cancer and it spread, that's never like, really early. You're not catching it really early if it's already spread. So I don't know what it's like. I don't know how much longer he has, but you know, he's a guy who deserves all of our respect, for sure. All right, now let's go to John Kerry, a much more mixed character. Not that he hasn't done some things that are great. I mean, we spoke about the Iran deal. I think that was fantastic. I think the thing with Cuba, fantastic. What he's been doing with Syria all along, horrendous. I don't know if you guys remember. He was one of the biggest hawks on the Syria issue, to the point where he was at committee hearings just absolutely badgering everybody, saying, how dare we not get involved? How dare we not go to war? So it's weird. Weird guy we're talking about here. All right. Reuters is reporting that Secretary of State John Kerry is posturing on Russia getting involved in the Syrian civil war. This is something that's a red flag, if you ask me. They say, quote, Kerry said on Wednesday, Russia's military support for Assad could raise the risk of confrontation with coalition forces fighting ISIS there. So here's a direct quote from Kerry. These actions could provoke a further escalation of the conflict and lead to the loss of more innocent lives, increasing the flow of refugees and risking a confrontation with the anti-ISIS coalition operating in Syria. So Russia has built up naval infantry forces and heavy equipment, including tanks and helicopters, at one of Syria's air bases. And U.S. officials say that this is raising the possibility of air combat missions in Syrian airspace. So here's why this story is really important. It makes no sense. Now, I say that because according to their own argument, according to the government's own official argument, it makes no sense. So they claim we're first and foremost, we are concerned about ISIS, we are concerned about al-Nusra, we are concerned about Khorasan, we are concerned about all these jihadist groups that are functioning in Syria as the rebels to Assad and the Syrian regime. That's the main argument they make. That's not what I'm saying. That's what they're saying. And now a year and a half ago, they would have said, no, Assad is the main problem. They stopped saying that. They flipped and they said, okay, no, ISIS is the problem and ISIS is fighting Assad. So let's think this through here. Russia steps in and says, okay, the Syrian regime is faltering. They're not as strong as they were. This is a really long war. They're kind of falling down now. We are going to go in there and back up the Syrian regime, which means we're going to fight the rebels, which means we're going to fight ISIS and al-Nusra. And the U.S. is like, I can't believe you're doing that. You're going to fuck everything up here. Why are you getting involved? If I was president, if I was in the government, I'd be fucking doing cartwheels in my office. Russia just admitted to you, yeah, we're going to go in there and do the dirty work. We're going to go in there and clean up. We're going to try to get rid of ISIS. We're going to try to beat the jihadists, and we're going to back up the Syrian regime. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. Is what I'm saying, oh, I'm endorsing Assad and every human rights atrocity that he's done, and I'm in favor of killing civilians when he does it? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. But what I am saying is, according to our own government line, now our biggest concern is ISIS. Russia says here, we're going to go in there and fight ISIS, and the U.S. is like, fucking Russia. Why would you be upset? You said time and time again, Republicans and Democrats have said, well, we don't want ground troops in there, which I agree with. But we're doing airstrikes, and now Russia's like, okay, we're basically going to help with the airstrikes. We're going to go after ISIS. And we're like, no. You're like a toddler. What's wrong with you? Again, you should be cheering this. Now, I get it. The real concern they have is, well, we don't want to see Russia get any bigger militarily. We don't want to see them flex any more muscle because that could be a bad sign and that could show future aggression and expansion and blah, 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 blah. That's the argument they make. But it's a loose argument. It's an argument that already rests on the premise that Russia equals bad, and anything they do, by definition, is escalation of their conflict with us, and anything we do in response is, by definition, escalation of the conflict with them. And the problem with a guy like John Kerry on this issue is that he's like, yeah, let's escalate it further. So Russia's like, we're going to go fight ISIS. And they're like, how dare you escalate the conflict between us? Basically he's saying, back down. This could raise the risk of confrontation with coalition forces fighting ISIS there. No, it can't, because they're telling you we're on your side if you're fighting ISIS. So it fucking bothers me to no end. And remember, guys, this is not an endorsement of anything wrong Assad may have done. This is not an endorsement of anything you know, wrong Putin does. I'm not saying Putin is lovely and America sucks. That's not the argument I'm making by any stretch of the imagination. But what I am saying is, according to our own official line, our own stated logic in Syria, Russia says, we agree with you, we're going to help you with that. And we go, fucking Russia, fuck you. Why are you escalating this? Why are you, you know, raising the risk of confrontation with coalition forces by agreeing with us and fighting the people that we say we want to fight? This is nonsense. But again, what it really comes down to is, and we've spoken about it before, the U.S. is like a chicken with its head cut off when it comes to Syria, for reasons I already stated. At the beginning, we were like, oh, Assad's terrible, we got to go topple him. Then we flipped to, no, the people fighting Assad are terrible, we got to fight alongside Assad against these people. And today, they're still caught in limbo in that conflict. They don't like either side. So what are they doing? Well, just recently they announced, okay, we're still mostly attacking ISIS, but every once in a while if we see some Syrian forces aligned with Assad, we're going to attack them too. The fuck? So you're literally arguing, the Obama administration is saying we're going to do what George Bush did in Iraq when they got in the middle of a civil war and everybody flipped the fuck out. The Obama administration is like, yeah, we're going to do the same thing. Why would you do that? There's no reason to do that, because the bottom line is it doesn't really come down to, hey, who's violating human rights, who's a bad actor here, who are jihadists. That has nothing to do with it. What it really comes down to is the global chessboard of geopolitical power. What it really comes down to is the U.S. knows Assad is aligned with Russia and Iran. We're not so hot on Russia and Iran. We would like it if we had control of that region. We would like it if we had our own puppet regime in that particular region of the world. So that we want to have our cake and eat it too now. We know we don't like the rebels because, again, they're jihadists. We know we don't like Assad. So in the mind of the idiots in Washington, they think just arm anybody to take over the region and then make that person loyal to us. That's what they think, which is why we have people like General Petraeus who said, let's arm moderate al-Qaeda members. Not kidding. You think I'm strawmanning? You go read the fucking articles. You go look in the Secular Talk archive. We did a long piece on it. This is, everybody knows this news. It came out recently. This is how we've gotten to that point, guys. We have a bunch of morons in Washington that view everything through the lens of imperialism and view everything through the lens of a power struggle, even going back to a Cold War power struggle. And as a result of that, even if somebody else does something that we should be happy about, like fighting ISIS, we go, how dare you fight ISIS? All right. Now we'll go to Fox News and their Pope bashing. I'm not sure there's two pundits in here, maybe three. One of them, Judge Napolitano, Stuart Varney, and I don't know who the other one is. But either way, you're about to hear a whole lot of shitty points, if I don't say so myself. Fox Business Network bashed the Pope to no end this morning. Let's take a look.
As we're waiting for further proceedings here, I want to bring in our panel because, as I said, I do believe the Pope just walked right into the politics of climate change. It was
said
a full, throated statement.
No
right
longer
there.
A problem that can be left to a future generation. Very strong statement.
It was politics, was it not, Judge?
It's a hot-button political issue because this administration has chosen to address climate change administratively through the EPA rather than legislatively in areas that Congress go. Very, very hot button.
I thought he had saved these comments for his address to Congress.
But he did not. That was a clear-cut statement on climate.
He also
right
invoked Martin Luther King's 1963 I Have a Dream speech when he said, about climate and development, we had defaulted on a promissory note. Now is the time to honor it. Mr. King's speech at that time was talking about basically jobs and discrimination against people of color. By the way, it's worth noting at this time that the unemployment rate for African Americans is still higher than 10%.
He did say that we had defaulted on a promissory note. I think that's the reference to the 1963 Martin Luther King.
He's taking Martin Luther King's words about treating people equally irrespective of the color of their skin and attempting to extrapolate it to the economy.
I was surprised at such an overt statement.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a political statement of support for the president, President Obama, on climate change.
He's supposed to, I understand totally that in his view, fighting poverty is basically in the same trajectory as fighting climate change, because he sees the people being injured by climate change as being amongst the world's most poor. But what it is, he actually advocates in Laudato for less growth, a reversal of growth in the developed world to fuel growth in the underdeveloped world. How anti-development policies would help the poor of India or Africa who knows, right?
It's not coherent. Tens of millions
of course.
Of people.
Of course.
You raise the price of energy, and what does that do to poor people in Africa, parts of Asia, Latin America? It impoverishes them.
Yeah.
And the Pope is now advocating precisely those policies.
That's exactly right. It's hard to understand because it's incoherent.
Yeah, he's incoherent. Did you hear what Varney just said at the end there? He's like, the Pope is for policies that impoverish people. Unbelievable. Except everything he said since day one that he's been in power has been the opposite of that. He's made economic justice and equality, those are main things on his platform. Those are main things that he talks about all the time. Now, you might not agree with how he goes about getting those things done, but to say that he's advocating policies that will impoverish people, that's just objectively not true. And look at that, man. They have the nerve to just totally twist what his arguments are, because they said the Pope is against growth. He's advocating for anti-growth ideas. No, what he said is, we shouldn't only focus on growth to the detriment of all other things. Like, for example, when you bring in the point of externalities, which is unintended consequences of a free marketplace, that's where you get pollution, that's where you get climate change, that's where you get a whole bunch of these problems, that's where you get paying people less than they can afford to live on. And the Pope is saying, hey, we can't only focus on corporate growth, because then that neglects all these other really serious problems. But notice how they flipped it, and they just said, he's anti-growth, to try to simplify, dumb down, and twist his argument to make it seem like he's some kind of a crazy person. And isn't it hilarious? Only on Fox Business would they not attack the Pope for things that I think are fair game to attack him for, like all the pageantry and the nonsense traditional BS where he's wearing a dress and people sing and it's a show, it's just goofy religious nonsense. That they're all cool with. Nobody says a word about that. But when he dares to say intelligent things about, hey, maybe we should treat people good and not fuck up the environment, they're like, unbelievable, I can't stand this guy. And then finally, I love how obsessed Stuart Varney is with the fact that the Pope dared to bring up climate change in any way. He's like, he's bringing up climate change. How can he bring up climate change? This is politics. That's what he said. As if that's just like a brush aside. Like, well, that ends the conversation. It's politics. I can't believe he's talking about politics. He can't do that. But wait, you guys are in the party that always love to marry together religion and state, so long as the religious figure is parroting your conservative horseshit. You've never said when it's a right-wing religious leader and they say something crazy, unless it's a Muslim, of course, then you'll attack. But if it's a Christian and it's a right-winger, you never say, politics, politics, either. You can't talk about that, this is politics, you got to keep that separate. You never do that. Only when it's a somewhat liberal message do you go, politics, this is fucked up. And then they have the nerve to say he's stealing MLK's legacy to advocate for economic justice. They make it seem like, well, clearly MLK would be opposed to this. Do you know nothing about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Not only did he care about racial equality and justice, he also cared about economic equality and justice. He was gunned down at a union protest. He was fighting for fair wages when he was gunned down. He's got quotes on all different things. For example, with the healthcare system, he says inequality in healthcare may be the worst form of injustice. The list goes on and on where he advocates for, hey, we need to have a living wage, so on and so forth. These are all things that Pope Francis agrees with. And he doesn't have to bring up MLK and misquote him to say he's on his side. MLK would have been on his side. Of course, the ignorance parade at Fox Business Network is endless, and here they prove it yet again. All right. So let's take a break here, and then when we come back, the DNC denounced Marco Rubio because of something I think that's pretty fucking silly, so I'm actually going to defend Marco Rubio. I can't believe I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And then the Associated Press says they're no longer going to use the term climate denier. Interesting. Why are they doing it? I'm going to read you exactly what their reasoning is, and I'll tell you whether or not I agree with it. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin. Doing clothes, you would have thought I had hell, but they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself. You see, it's broke, nigga, race them, that's that, don't touch anything in the stove. And it's rich, nigga, race them, that's that, come in, please buy more. What you want, a Bentley, fur coat, a diamond chain? All you blacks want all the same thing. Used to only be niggas, everybody playing. Spending everything on Alexander Wang, new slave. You see his leaders and his followers, but I'd rather be a dick than a swallower. You see his leaders and his followers, but I'd rather be a dick than a swallower. These Maybach keys, I wear my heart on the sea. I know if we the new slaves, I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I see the blood on the leaves. I know that we the new slaves. I see the blood on the leaves. They throwing hate at me, want me to stay at ease. Fuck you and your corporation, y'all niggas can't control me. I know that we the new slaves. I know that we the new slaves. I'm about to ride the fuck out. I'm going Bobby Boucher. I know that pussy ain't free. You niggas pussy ain't me. Y'all throwing contract to me. You know that niggas can't read. I want some Maybach keys. Fuck it, say my feet. I know that we the new slave. Y'all niggas can't fuck with me. Y'all niggas can't fuck with Yay. Y'all niggas can't fuck with Yay. I moved my family out the country so you can't see where I stay. So go and grab the reporter so I can smash that recorder. Sit there confused with some bullshit like the New World Order. Meanwhile, the DEA teamed up with the CCA. They try to lock niggas up. They try to make a new slave. See, that's that probably on prison. Get your piece. Today. They probably all in the Hamptons, bragging about what they made. Fuck you and your Hampton house. I fucked your Hampton spouse. Came on a Hampton blouse and then a Hampton mouth. Y'all about to turn shit up. I'm about to tear shit down. I'm about to air shit out. Now what the fuck they gonna say now?
All right, welcome back, guys, and let's get to Marco Rubio. Again, not somebody I really want to talk about here. or defend, clearly. This is a first for secular talk, but I think you'll see why I'm doing it, and I think you'll see, or hopefully you'll see, that I think it's the right thing to do here. The DNC denounced Marco Rubio on Tuesday because he's holding a fundraiser at a rich donor's house, and the donor happens to have Nazi memorabilia. So the International Business Times reports on this, quote, "The fundraiser happened to be scheduled during Yom Kippur, the Jewish holiday of atonement and the holiest day on the faith's calendar. Rubio was holding the event in conservative philanthropist Harlan Crow's home library, which features two paintings by Adolf Hitler, a signed copy of the dictator's Mein Kampf. Tickets for the fundraising event range from $1,000 per person to $10,800. Democratic National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz condemned the fundraiser as a gross act of disrespect. An event at a home with items like these is appalling at any time of the year. Holding an event in a house featuring the artwork and signed autobiography of a man who dedicated his life to extinguishing the Jewish people is the height of insensitivity and indifference. It is astounding that the presence of these items that represent horror for millions of Jews all over the world would not stop Mr. Rubio or anyone on his team in their tracks when planning this event." All right, so let's understand something here. The guy who's the rich asshole with the memorabilia, does he have like a Hitler room at his house? He's like, "Oh, come in here, and you have to do the Heil sign when you go in there." No, he doesn't. He's not a Nazi. He has Nazi memorabilia, by the way, along with memorabilia from a million and one other different eras and times and places, etc. So this guy just collects memorabilia. Some of the memorabilia happens to be Nazi memorabilia. Is he a Nazi sympathizer? Of course he's not a Nazi sympathizer. But even if he were, which he's not, does that mean that by definition Marco Rubio, he must be a Nazi sympathizer too? Guys, this is no fucking different than the bullshit that they tried to pull, that the Republicans tried to pull on President Obama when they said, "Well, there was that one time that you shook the hand of the guy who did a bombing at the place, and Bill Ayers," and whatever all their fucking names are that the right-wingers love to parrot nonstop. They're like, "Well, we've heard this one before, too. You were friends with that Palestinian guy who knew a guy who was in Hamas. Gotcha. Fucking terrorist sympathizer." That's nonsense, guilt by association, absurdity is what it is. It's dumb when the Republicans do it. It's dumb when the Democrats do it. The thing that annoys me about this is, speaking of Debbie Wasserman Schultz here, you're acting like, what, there's nothing policy substance-wise that you can disagree with Marco Rubio on? You can disagree with him on virtually everything policy substance-wise. The guy is adult. The guy believes ridiculous things. His policies are terrible. Why not rip him apart in that realm and talk about that as opposed to, "Oh my God, you're going to the house of somebody who happens to have some Nazi memorabilia." What's so annoying about this is you should be more outraged simply at the fact that it's a big money donor and our political system is bought by big money donors. You should be mad at the event because it's open corruption, it's bribery. That's what you should focus on, if anything. But that, you just grandfather in. You're like, "Well, we do the bribery too on the Democratic side, so that's fine. The problem is he happens to own some Nazi memorabilia." Yes, but that doesn't mean he's on the side of the Nazis. What a ridiculous thing to believe. Seriously, that's as stupid as saying, "So I've watched Nazi documentaries time and time again." That's as stupid as saying, "Well, I have a box set from the Nazi era, from the History Channel, which details all that stuff and tells the story." Are you a fucking Nazi sympathizer? I see Hitler on the cover of a DVD over there. You a fucking Nazi sympathizer? Is that what you are? No, see, that's stupid people think that. Or people who are purposefully trying to slander the other side. So you're not using a genuine argument. You're not saying, "Hey, here are the facts of what you believe, and here's why I disagree with them." You're just going, "Nazi memorabilia, bad people, Nazi memorabilia, are you sympathizers? I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there. Why else would you be at a place with the Nazi memorabilia? I can't believe you guys." No, that's a shitty argument, and that's an argument that's nowhere near the kind of argument a Democrat should be making. But the sad thing is, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I don't know why I expect much of her anyways, is the same person who's largely responsible for limiting the number of debates to help Hillary Clinton and screw Bernie Sanders in the upcoming election. So, Debbie, for your own good here, I mean, I know you're probably not going to listen to me and you're going to keep doing ridiculous things, but stop. You're not only are you, besmirching yourself here and your own ideology because you're not arguing on the merits of policy, you're making the rest of us look bad. You're making the rest of the people on the left look bad when you make it seem like we buy in or we agree with your shitty, hacky arguments that you make against Marco Rubio. Argue policy. Leave all this nonsense, guilt by association, connect the dots BS aside. Okay. How sad is that, man? I don't know. That really got under my skin, if you couldn't tell. That really, really got under my skin. That's below, something that a Democrat should do, I think. All right. Next, now we go to the Associated Press. The Associated Press announced that they're no longer going to refer to climate science deniers as deniers. They say, we're not going to call them climate deniers or climate science deniers, and we're also not going to call them skeptics. Climate science skeptics. So let me give you exactly what they say here. Quote, our guidance is to use climate change doubters or those who reject mainstream climate science and to avoid the use of skeptics or deniers. Here's their reasoning. Some background on the change. Scientists who consider themselves real skeptics who debunk mysticism, ESP, and other pseudoscience, such as those who are a part of the Center for Skeptical Inquiry, complain that non-scientists who reject mainstream climate science have usurped the phrase skeptic. They say they aren't skeptics because proper skepticism promotes scientific inquiry, critical investigation, and the use of reason in examining controversial and extraordinary claims. That group prefers the phrase climate change deniers. For those who reject accepted global warming data and theory, but those who reject climate science say the phrase denier has the pejorative ring of Holocaust denier, so the Associated Press prefers climate change doubter or someone who rejects mainstream science. All right, so what they're saying here is we're not going to call them skeptics because that gives them too much credit. A skeptic is somebody who actually cares about science and debunks horseshit. We don't want to give them too much credit, so we're not going to call them skeptics anymore. And then they say on the flip side, we don't want to call them deniers either because that's too pejorative. It has the ring of Holocaust denier. So let's drop that one too. So drop the term that's too favorable to them. Drop the term that's too much against them. So what's my take on it? Do I think this makes sense? Why or why not? I agree with them for one of their points. The other point, I totally disagree with them. I agree with them on the skeptic point. Because on the skeptic point, it's true, you're giving them too much credit. Skeptic, for the longest time, has had a positive connotation. Like, oh, you're a skeptic. You don't buy into voodoo horse shit. So that's right. You shouldn't call somebody who's wrong on the science a skeptic because they're wrong. Skeptic, insofar as it actually has a positive connotation, should not be used to describe people who are wrong on something, and it's provable, it's demonstrable that they're wrong. Now, on the flip side, I wouldn't stop calling them deniers because I think the Holocaust denier argument is made up. Nobody who's ever read, X, Y, and Z is a climate science denier or a global warming denier. Nobody who's ever read that has gone, are they a Holocaust denier too? I can't tell the difference. I see the word denier. Never happened. I'll go as far as say nobody who's ever read an article on climate change where in the article they reference deniers, nobody's ever read that article and said, even if it just said deniers, not global warming deniers or climate change deniers, nobody's ever read that article and gone, wait, I missed something. Are they talking about Holocaust deniers now? That's never happened. Because if the article was all about climate science, they get it. When you mention deniers, you mean climate science deniers. So why am I not in favor of dropping that one and continuing to call them deniers? You ready for this? I hope you're sitting down. Because they are deniers. They are climate science deniers. They are global warming deniers. They're not Holocaust deniers, but nobody called them Holocaust deniers. You made up that some people think that you're talking about Holocaust deniers because you use the term denier. That just doesn't make any sense. That's like saying, isn't there a NASCAR driver, Kyle Petty? That's like saying if you're talking about politics and you bring up Kyle Kalinske, Like, you're afraid that people are going to say, what does the NASCAR driver have to do with this? Why are you talking about Kyle Petty? But nobody ever thought that. Nobody ever said that because those are two different Kyles. It may be the same term, the same word, the same name, but it doesn't mean the same thing because they're different people. So if you talk about denier in the climate sense, it's true they're deniers of climate science. If you're saying in the Holocaust sense, they're not that. Different topic. So the thing is, you know what this article smacks of? False equivalence. They have to try to be 50-50, so what do? They say, well, this term gives them too much credit. Skeptic gives them too much credit. But denier is too harsh and too pejorative. So we'll get rid of both of them and we'll, you know, use the fucking mouthful of those who reject mainstream climate science or climate change doubters. No, see, this is it, and let's be totally clear here. This is that whole PC culture that we talk about all the time, run amok. Because this is like, okay, how do we take into account people's feelings about this when we phrase these things? Why the fuck should that matter in any way, shape, or form? It should just matter, is the term accurate? Is it true or not? Skeptic is not accurate. It's not true because they're not really skeptical. They buy into bullshit. That's not a skeptic. Denier is true, so you should use denier. So it just bothers me that we still got this 50-50 nonsense going. It's not an open debate. It's not an open question. It's not, hey, somebody just brought up climate change. We must study it now. No, we know what's happening. We have the data to back it up, decades and decades and decades worth of data. So call it what it is and call the people who are wrong about it what they are. They are deniers. There's no problem with saying that, and everybody should say it and not play this PC game. Okay. Now, we'll talk a little bit here about Rush Limbaugh. Aren't you all excited? We haven't done a story on him, or I'm not sure we've done a Bill O'Reilly story in a while, which is kind of wild. But Rush made it in the show today. He must be proud. This is the most publicity he's gotten in years. More people will hear my segment about him than have listened to his show in the past 2 weeks. Ooh, burn, son. How's that taste? He wouldn't know because he doesn't know how to use the internet, so he can't find my show. Now I'm just being a dick. All right. Rush Limbaugh is going to whine about alleged Democratic anti-Christian bigotry. Check it out.
You mentioned this yesterday. How many of you people remember the countless times Democrats and members of the media have spoken out against the idea that we might elect an evangelical Christian as president? We can't have that. We can't have those kinds of views in the White House. We can't have people, they get in the White House, they start imposing their religious views on everybody. We can't have that. I mean, this was a constant refrain in the 70s and 80s. Hell, even the early part of the 90s. Pat Robertson, somebody else with close ties to evangelical Christians would seek office, and it didn't matter if it was the presidency. And here would come the media, here would come the Democrat Party. We can't have theocrats in office. We can't have deeply devout religious people. Why, that would be untenable. But now, as long as it's not Christians, any other religion, fine and dandy. Want to elect a Muslim president? Damn straight, fine and dandy. We're an open-ended, open-minded citizen. Keep the Christians out of here. But Muslim, fine and dandy. People have forgotten bigotry and discrimination that was on parade constantly from the Democrat Party and the media.
No, nobody forgot it because it didn't happen. It's not real. You made it up. So, Rush, when the left, including myself, talks about, hey, we're concerned about certain Christians when they run for office, listen carefully to who we're talking about. We say people like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum and people who have that particular strain of Christian thought. In other words, we are against fundamentalist Christians being president of the United States. I don't know if you noticed, the Democratic Party voted for President Obama. President Obama is a Christian. So Christianity is not the problem. The problem is fundamentalist Christianity. The problem is ultra-right-wing Christianity. And there's all different versions that you can talk about, some worse than others. Dominionism is one of the worst. But the list goes on and on. But needless to say, the overwhelming majority of Christians, of course the Democrats have no beef against voting for them. Most presidents throughout American history, whether Democrat or Republican, have been Christian. So there's no irrational anti-Christian bias on the left. We are specifically against fundamentalist Christians. Now, to the Muslim issue, because he's defending Ben Carson here. We're against fundamentalist Muslims being president, too. You're not going to find anybody on the left who's like, okay, can we get an al-Baghdadi clone in the White House, please? We'd really like that. Can we get somebody who was akin to Mullah Omar and where he was on the political spectrum? We'd really appreciate that. No, of course we disagree with that. We absolutely disagree with that. But that's not what Ben Carson said. Ben Carson didn't say, hey, I'm against fundamentalist Muslims being in office. No, what he said is Muslims should not be elected. They shouldn't run for office. And constitutionally, Muslims aren't allowed to be elected. It's not constitutional for Muslims to be president. Rush, we're against that because it's not true, and we're against that because it's dumb. He is saying all Muslims. He very clearly said that, and we are not saying all Christians. We're very clear about that, too. See, that's the thing. Since he can't beat us in the realm of ideas, he just has to make up what our position is. So he strawmans us, then he knocks down the straw man, and he pretends like Ben Carson said something much more benign than what he actually said. Again, Ben Carson said very clearly, you know, Muslims constitutionally can't be president, and we should never advocate for one. Okay, well, that is bigotry, and that is akin to somebody saying on the left, hey, Christians should never be president, and constitutionally they're not allowed to be president. But what's the difference here? Nobody ever said that on the left. Nobody ever said that. Nobody believes that. That's clear. You had to make it up because, again, you can't beat us in a real discussion. So strawman us, knock down the straw man, and then pretend like Carson said he's really concerned about fundamentalist Muslims when clearly he originally said he's concerned about Muslims, period. And Muslims constitutionally cannot be president, which is also not true. Okay. It always comes back with these guys to the Christian victim complex, doesn't it? He's so convinced that he's a victim. He's so convinced of it. He's so convinced of it. Over 70% of the population, Christian. On a state level, especially in the red states, the Christians are running fucking wild, implementing all types of nonsense policies like restricting reproductive rights for women. And yet he still has the nerve to claim we're under attack. No, you're doing the attacking. That's clear to anybody who actually looks at the policies that are being implemented and the direction of the country. Jesus, man, it's twist every single argument. Anti-Christian bigotry on the left. Oh, man. All right, now, do one more here, and we'll take a break. Kim Davis. I left myself a good chunk of time here because this is going to require a lot of breaking down of the bullshit because, man, there's a lot of bullshit that comes out of this clip. ABC News did an interview with Kim Davis, who, of course, is the now famous anti-gay Kentucky clerk who's denying gays their right to marry. So let's watch a portion of it, and then we'll come back and break it down.
I have never once spouted a word of hate. I've not been hateful. I've had people yelling and screaming and cussing me.
Kim Davis says she never expected to become a household name when she started denying marriage licenses at her county clerk office.
Just a normal person that has been touched by the grace of God, His mercy, and you know, I haven't always been a good person at all. When I deny for God, I deny for Him. And I was real good at living. For the devil.
You've been married four times. Mm-hmm. You've had children in an adulterous relationship. Mm-hmm. People are calling you a hypocrite. Are you?
No. I'm forgiven. Washed clean.
And so 4.5 years ago, when Davis found God, she says she could not separate church from state, believing that a marriage is only between a man and a woman. Davis, who was elected in November as a Democrat, refuses to obey the opinion of the Supreme Court that sent her to jail for contempt.
Who do you consider your boss? Is your boss God? Is your boss your constituents? Or is your boss the federal government?
Well, my constituents elected me. The main authority that rules my life is the Lord.
So godly authority trumps all authority in your mind?
Yes. So why would you want to remain in this position? I'm good at my job. I have friends. Okay, and my friends. I know where I stand, and we don't agree on this issue. And we're okay because we respect each other.
So you would deny your friends who are in gay relationships, you would deny them a marriage license as well?
I did. I can't put my name on a license that doesn't represent what God ordained marriage to be.
But you don't know God. You don't talk to God. It's your faith. It's not a fact, so you can't take your opinion and affect other people's lives and take their rights away from them. She's like, I have gay friends. We have a respectful disagreement on this. No, a respectful disagreement is, hey, I don't believe in gay marriage, but I'm not going to actually take away your right to marry. I might not agree with it, but you can still do it because I'm a third party. It has nothing to do with me. You're saying I am going to get involved. I am going to be a third party. I am going to interject even though I have nothing to do with it. And I'm going to take away your rights. Well, and it's no longer a civil disagreement. It's you imposing on them. No, it's unbelievable. The mental gymnastics that she does. I mean, at one point, she's asked point blank, are you a hypocrite? You've been married 4 times. That's against biblical law, too. You claim to only care about biblical law. That's against biblical law. You've been married 4 times. How are you not a hypocrite? And she's like, no, it's okay. God forgave me. You are still married to your 4th husband. So your argument is, well, I'm a sinner, but God forgave me. So it's okay that I'm still sinning right now because I'm still married to my 4th husband. Well, then why not use that same logic and apply it to gay people? So in other words, again, you don't have to agree with it. You can buy into your voodoo nonsense in the Bible and you can think it's real. But why can't God forgive the people in a gay marriage and then they can continue to sin and stay gay married? Because that's what you're doing. Remember, the Bible prevents you from doing what you're doing too, but you're still doing it. But you say, it's okay, God forgave me. Okay, so why can't gay people get married, stay married, and they tell you, it's okay, God forgave me. Yeah, I'm currently sinning still in a gay marriage, but you're currently sinning in your 4th marriage still. So hey, even Steven, shut the fuck up. See, this is my problem with somebody like her. Even by her own logic, she fails. So how stupid can a human being possibly be? You think you're making an argument for your side, but you're not. In fact, you're making an argument that would allow gay marriages. And all they have to say is, God forgave me, so I can still stay gay married because God forgave me. There's no thinking, and I love how she just basically admits, yes, I want America to be the Christian Saudi Arabia. I am pro-Sharia. Well, that's not what this country is founded on. Read the fucking founding documents. Read the Constitution. Go over the part about secularism. Go over the part about how the state is to be neutral on religious issues. She doesn't get it. She doesn't care to get it. And I got to give one more here because this is incredible. She says, well, no, you don't get it. It's okay because God's on my side. Well, again, your interpretation of your God is not factual. It's not real. You can't prove it. It's just your opinion, and your opinion cannot rule over everybody else's, and you deny the legal process because then that's fascism. Then you're a tyrant, and that's not the way this country is founded. It's not Kim Davis's tyranny is the United States of America. But let me get to the actual part here. She says, I've never spoken a word of hate, so I don't know why people are all mad at me, cursing at me. I don't care what you say. I care about your actions. So I got a hell of a lot more respect for some county clerk in Bumblefuck, Arkansas, who's anti-gay. He says out loud to all his friends and family, I'm against gay marriage, but he does his goddamn job when he goes to work and he allows gays to get married because it's not his fucking call. I have a lot more respect for somebody like that. I don't care what you're saying. I care what you're doing. And that's the problem, Kim. is that, again, you're taking your opinion and you're saying, I will implement this as law, even though the Supreme Court said it's not law, and even though you don't have any argument to back up what you're doing other than God. Again, that's not an argument. That's just your interpretation of this thing that's faith, that's not fact. It would be one thing if you're doing some sort of civil disobedience and you're standing up for something that makes sense. You know, I'm tired of people being jailed for expressing their freedom and doing drugs when they don't hurt anybody. I'm standing up on this. Okay, well, at least you have some sort of rational argument to back up what you're doing there. Here, you're denying other people their rights, and then when you're pushed on it, you go, God, he's on my side, not on your side. Well, there's no there, and you're just a mullah. You're just an ayatollah. And we all know if we were talking about somebody who was Muslim and they wanted to implement their religious ideology like this, everybody on the right would all of a sudden be on the proper side where they say, whoa, separation of religion and state here. What are you, crazy? You can't do that. That's Sharia. You can't implement that. But when it's their religion, oh, how fucking convenient. Now you have the defenders all over the place, including a lot of the leading Republicans at the Republican debate last week. So this is unacceptable. She's an absolute joke. And she gets whatever she has coming to her. I hope she loses her job. She should be impeached. I know you can't fire her. You can only impeach her. So impeach her. Or if she keeps blocking it, yeah, put her back in jail. Because you're not allowed to do this, and it should be perfectly clear to everybody who's considering it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Pat Buchanan defends Kim Davis. Then we'll get into Ben Carson and the amazing percentage of Republicans who want to ban Islam. All right, stay right there. All right, we're back, guys. And I'm not done with Kim Davis because I have to go to one more defender here. Pat Buchanan is going to defend Kim Davis here on Newsmax TV, and he's going to do it in the worst way possible.
Inability of somebody who is traditionally Muslim to be president, how is that different than a Governor Mike Huckabee who goes out and makes the statement that if you're a Christian, the supreme being takes precedence over the Supreme Court, even though our Constitution arranges the judiciary to rule on the Constitution? He's saying, in fact, he advised the states to set it aside because the supreme being takes precedence. Is he qualified to be president?
Well, I think you're talking here about, but basically, take a look at what Martin Luther King said from a Birmingham jail. He quoted Thomas Aquinas, and he said, an unjust law is no law. Now, the people who sat in at the lunch counters, the people who defied court orders for marches, and all of these, they broke the law repeatedly again and again because they said the law is an unjust and immoral law. I mean, let's go back to the Bibles. If you were told the firstborn, every child had to be sacrificed to the state, we all know the thing to do would be to defy that law. So there is a natural law. There is a, and Mike Huckabee would say it's God's law, that is higher than positive law. And when an individual confronts a positive law, for example, my father was a devout Catholic. If you told him he had to give abortion or abortifacients and contraceptives to his employees, he would have broken the law.
I hear what you're saying. I really do. But it seems to me it's kind of picking and choosing. You don't like it if Muslim law were to be considered by a Muslim candidate for president, but you're fine when it's Christian law, when it is at odds with the law of the Constitution.
Well, now, you know, I don't know that we disagree. What I would do with regard to this, I think the proper thing is, I think that woman did the right thing. She defied the law and went to jail and paid the price. That's the price of civil disobedience of an unjust law. But I do believe this. I mean, when I was in the Nixon White House, I urged the president to defy court orders, mandating court-ordered busing from counties into cities, which were tearing apart cities and towns, defy the court and work with the Congress of the United States to really circumscribe the jurisdiction of the court under Article 2, Section, or under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. In other words, there would be a constitutional confrontation. You're exactly right. I don't disagree with that if you believe your position is correct.
All right, so he's defending Kim Davis there, and he gets very specific at the end when he says, well, this is kind of like when I was working for the Nixon administration, and I argued for X, Y, and Z, and you can use this legal argument to back it up. Notice how he didn't go all the way and tell you what that was really about. Well, we know what it was really about. So Right Wing Watch, reports the following, quote, Buchanan added that he himself had advocated civil disobedience when he urged President Nixon to defy a 1971 Supreme Court decision that, quote, called for district-wide desegregation and allowed for the use of busing to achieve integration. So Pat Buchanan is saying, well, I mean, yeah, Kim Davis is a hero for standing up for what she believes in based on her faith and all this. And it's very similar to what I did when I argued against desegregation. And I tried to convince the president to take on the Supreme Court when they said, no, you have to desegregate. Oh, Pat. Oh, Pat. Did you just forget what year it is? Did you just have a flashback and you thought it was 1972 when that opinion was still believed by, you know, whatever, 40% or so of the country? I don't know what the exact number is for back then, to be clear, but that's not anything that any rational person would say today. He's like, yeah, hero, like when I argued to continue segregation. That makes you the bad guy. That doesn't make you a hero. And notice how he flipped the argument. So again, when he brought up MLK to say, well, there is such thing as civil disobedience, right? An unjust law is no law. That's what he says. Now, of course, everybody agrees with that aspect of it, sure. But your argument can't just be God. That's Kim Davis's argument. That was the argument of a lot of the people who were for continuing segregation. Sure, Martin Luther King had religious backing for what he was saying as well, to say we should integrate, but he didn't only have ridiculous religious backing. He also had a rational argument that was a strong argument. Whereas the idiots who were pro-segregation, they either used religious argumentation or they just said, my culture, my system, I have a right to take away the rights of blacks, which was a terrible argument. By the same token, today with Kim Davis, it's a horrible argument. She's like, I should have to not listen to the law because God and because fuck the gays. We're used to that culture which says, fuck you, gay people, and I want to continue that. That's not an argument. That's not civil disobedience. You're not a hero. Guys, you're the bad people. If you don't realize that now, well, that sucks for you. But I can guarantee you that even though right now, what, only 61% of the American people are for gay marriage, thereabouts, that number is going to keep going up, and there's going to come a time, I don't know how long in the future, 40 years, 50 years, whatever, where people view you, Pat Buchanan, based on what you did in segregation and what you're doing today, and people view Kim Davis as, oh, there's no gray area here. There's no, hey, it's a matter, it's a difference of opinion or whatever. It's, oh, you are the bad guys who are always for intolerance and bigotry and segregation and separation, and the other guys are the good guys, and all along you thought you were the next MLK, you thought you were the heroes, but in reality, you were the opposite. Just like somebody said on Twitter recently that I keep bringing up here, they say, Kim Davis thinks she's Rosa Parks, but in reality, she's the old white woman on the front of the bus screaming at Rosa Parks to get to the back of the bus. Ain't that the truth? Not just about Kim Davis, but also about Pat Buchanan when it comes to gay marriage, and in his case, when it came to segregation. All right, now, I'm going to sneeze. 3, 2, 1. All right, maybe not 3 seconds. Oh, it's going away. That's nice. What the fuck? Apparently, if you put your head back, you can not sneeze when you thought you were going to sneeze. Who the fuck knew that? You learn something new every day. All right, Ben Carson and the new Republican Dodge, which is, I see this fucking everywhere now. Ben Carson was caught saying something stupid a few days ago about how Muslims constitutionally cannot be president, and he would never advocate for a Muslim being president. So how did he respond, or how is he going to respond to the backlash here? He's going to blame PC culture.
I said I would support anyone. Again, it seems to be hard for people to actually hear English and understand it.
Right. Blame other people.
I would support anyone, regardless of their background, if in fact they embrace American values and our Constitution and are willing to place that above their beliefs.
Dr. Carson, isn't that basically an underlying suspicion that Muslim Americans are strong for us? Why should they have to take power to now?
Because Sharia law is completely antithetical to Americanism. That's why.
Dr. Carson, this is something that now the 5 years of campaign, people are saying being anti-Muslim with your statements. What do you, how do you fix that? How do you come back from this perception?
The only way we fix that is fix the PC culture in our country.
Yeah, of course.
Which only can listen to one narrative. And if it doesn't fit their philosophy, then they have to try to ascribe some motive to it to make it fit.
This is now becoming the classic go-to right-wing dodge. If you say something stupid, if you say something that's not true, and then people call you out on it, fucking PC culture. PC, speech police, constantly offended. You know what they say. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. Am I saying that there is no such thing as people being too PC and going too far and, you know, being offended as a profession almost? Of course that exists. But guess what? The people who are mad at Ben Carson for what he said are not those people. the people mad about at Ben Carson are smart people because he said something absolutely ridiculous. So, remember how he started out his little rant there? He said, I would support anyone regardless of their background. That's what he says he said. But you didn't say that. In fact, we have the clip. Let's take a look at what you did say.
Islam is consistent with the Constitution?
No, I don't. I do not. I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that.
Quote, I said I would support anyone regardless of their background. You said the opposite of that. You said Islam is not consistent with our Constitution. How can anybody say that? So you know that every single Muslim literally believes in Sharia and would implement Sharia. That's the argument you're making. Islam is not consistent with our Constitution. But that's not true because we have guys like Keith Ellison, a Democratic congressman, who's a Muslim, way less theocratic than you. So this idea of it's not consistent with the Constitution, no, every religion and any religion and any non-religion and any belief system is consistent with the Constitution. We have freedom of religion in this country. You can believe whatever you want to believe. So it's not that we're mad at you because we're offended and we're PC. We're mad at you because you're wrong. Is this so hard to get through your head? But again, when they don't have a good response, this is the tap dance they go into. It's almost like when they say something dumb and there's a loud backlash, they have to justify it in their own mind somehow. So they paint themselves as the victim and they think, well, I'm the only one keeping it real. I'm the only one telling it like it is. And then all of a sudden, everybody getting mad at them becomes in their own mind a justification to explain further why they're right. Make no mistake about it, that's exactly what's going on in his head, and this is what goes on in the heads of all different people on the right who scream about PC culture, whether it's Sarah Palin or Ann Coulter. They think the louder the left is at them and the more mad the left gets at them, that that's further evidence that they're correct. Because they can't entertain the idea for a second that maybe with a lot of these points they're making, they're dumbasses. They're ignorant. They're stupid. They're wrong. And again, this is coming from somebody who's a diehard atheist, and I'm against all the different religions. But see, with a guy like Ben Carson, what's so frustrating is, as you heard him say right there, Muslims, nope, shouldn't be elected president, the wrong kind of people, I would never advocate for that. But Christians? He went on this whole spiel after his comments here where he talked about how all I am is anti-theocracy. That's the main problem here. That's the point I was trying to make. Well, Ben, if you really are against theocracy, you would www.stepasidesun.com because you're an advocate of theocracy. We proved it the other day. Just because you don't want Islamic theocracy, just because you don't want Sharia, doesn't mean you're not in favor of religious law. You very clearly are. You've said time and time again this is a Christian nation based on Christian principles. That's not true. And you've also said you base your tax plan on the Bible. Well, that's religious law. So spare me with your tap dance that you go into now where you try to get away from people being mad at you and people correcting your ass. They're mad at you because they should be mad at you. They're correcting your ass because they should correct your ass. You are a bigot. You are anti-Muslim. And you're not a clear thinker. Okay. Next. Whew. Sticking with a similar theme here. There's some new public policy polling research out about the election in Iowa, and there's an incredible fact buried in the results here. So among Iowa Republicans, they say just, quote, 49% think the religion of Islam should even be legal in the United States, with 30% saying it shouldn't be legal and 21% not sure. 49% of Iowa Republicans think that Islam should be legal. That's unreal. Now, let's think about this here. This is the kind of bigotry that people on the left, by and large, are afraid of. This is what they fear when it comes to anti-Muslim fear-mongering. Because if you take out Islam and you put in any other religion there, everybody would be outraged. Could you imagine 49% think Jews shouldn't be legal in the United States? There's not a single person on the planet who wouldn't call it anti-Semitism. And, of course, you're right if you call it anti-Semitism. That is anti-Semitism. By the same token, this is anti-Muslim bigotry. And as Glenn Greenwald pointed out about this on Twitter, he said, these are the people who self-describe as small government people and the party of individual liberty and religious freedom. The same people that say that have this cognitive dissonance, and they think half of them are like, yeah, I'm not sure that shouldn't be legal. Those words written on paper, the holy book, should not be legal. Well, for fuck's sake, man. Once you go down that slippery slope, there's no end to it. If you ban the Quran, you can ban any other book, Communist Manifesto, gone. You know, different books describing different political ideologies, obviously biographies of people throughout history who were controversial or terrible people, Mein Kampf, gone. You name it. Once you open that door of ban this thing because we don't like it, well then, you know, it's on the whims of the government, they're going to ban whatever the fuck they want to ban in terms of things that they dislike. And this is coming from a guy, I need everybody to understand this, and I'm sure all of you already do. Not only am I no fan of religion, I think all religions, to one extent or another, are just large cults. They advocate for anti-intellectual dogmatic positions. The things they advocate for across the board, whether they're good things or bad things, they're not true. They're mythologies that a lot of people happen to believe. It's dangerous. It is cultish. So I'm against all this stuff. But I'm not going to ban it because I'm not a fucking fascist. I'm not a tyrant. I don't agree with the religions. That doesn't mean I take a SWAT team with me and I break into my local church and hold them at gunpoint and tell them we need to confiscate their religious materials. That's crazy. That's crazy. That makes you as big of an extremist, if not a bigger extremist, than extremists on the other side. If you want to use violence or you want to start banning things, you're the problem. Look in the fucking mirror. And again, the irony is what? They're so afraid of, oh my God, Sharia law is going to take over. That's why we need to ban Islam. When this is the same, the Iowa Republicans, these are the same people who, many of them, actively in favor of Christian theocracy taking over. So they're not mad at Muslims and they're not mad at Sharia law because they're against religions in principle. They're mad at them because they're jealous. They're like, okay, if they get over and they get to implement their voodoo, that's fucked up. I want to implement my voodoo. I want to implement my voodoo, so I need to beat all the competition. No, here's the bottom line. None of your voodoo is going to rule over us, okay, but I'm also not going to ban, you know, the different aspects of your voodoo in terms of the books that you read to do the rituals and believe your voodoo. So we need to be objective about this and fair about this here. And finally, let me just say this. These guys don't know anything about the Constitution. The constitutional party that's always like, Second Amendment, not debatable. They don't know anything about the Constitution. So, well, let me read you some parts of the Constitution here. The First Amendment. The first part of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Need I repeat that? Let me repeat the last part of that. Or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So when you say, I want to ban Islam, you are not allowed to do that. That's unconstitutional. That's illegal. That's wrong. The founders would fucking hate you. They would hate you if you advocated for that. So you can have it one of two ways. Either you cannot advocate for that, or you can advocate for that and admit and understand that you're un-American and you don't believe in the Constitution. It's one or the other. You can't have it both ways. And finally, Article 6 says, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. So in other words, if you're religious, if you're non-religious, if you're Muslim, if you're Jewish, if you're Christian, whatever, there is no religious test for office. So you can get elected based on the merits of your policies. But these guys don't give a shit about the merits of anybody's policies. All they care about is in-group, out-group tribalism. Christian, good. Muslim bad. Ban Islam. Because we believe in freedom. What? That doesn't make any sense? Oh. All right, next. Bowling. Let's do it. So Ben Carson recently said that Muslims should never be president in America, and constitutionally, they're not allowed to be president. He made that up. That's clearly not true. But Eric Bowling is going to weigh in on the controversy, and I think you know what's going to happen here.
He stepped up and said exactly what he felt about not being able to advocate a Muslim as president, and I think there are a lot of people who are out there who heard that and said, you know what, I couldn't either. His mistake was that he quoted the Constitution. Chuck Todd led him into the constitutionality of the idea, and he blundered that, and he could fix that very easily, saying, I didn't really understand the question or the Article 6 of the Constitution. That aside, he can still come back with the original part of his idea was that because in Islam, Sharia law supersedes governing law. And unless you're willing to denounce Sharia law as the governing law over yourself and anyone you oversee, I wouldn't vote for a Muslim either. If there was a Muslim that said who I loved as a president and what he wasn't willing to denounce the fact that Sharia law supersedes the Constitution, you're going to say the Constitution is over the Sharia law.
You wouldn't vote for.
Oh, that is delicious. So let's think about this. Eric Bowling is saying, I wouldn't vote for a Muslim unless they say, of course I denounce Sharia law. All right, I agree with that 100%. 100%. I mean, I think it's a given that if somebody like Keith Ellison runs for president, of course he's not going to try to implement Sharia law. Don't be ridiculous. I think the overwhelming majority of American Muslims would never want to do something like that. But that's his argument. Hey, I'm not going to vote for them unless they say I distance myself and I don't agree with Sharia law. Fair. I agree with that, Eric. Want to take it one step further here, buddy? Or not? I shouldn't even say one step further because it's not a step further. Want to apply the same standard to Christianity here? You know, I'm not going to vote for a Christian unless they swear they're not going to make policy decisions based on biblical law. And based on God or their faith. I would vote for a Christian, but they have to say, of course I'm not going to make decisions based on the Bible, my holy book, my faith, or Christian law. I'm just not going to do that. See, that's where he starts to go, whoa, wait, what? No, when I said the person needs to distance themselves from their faith, I'm only talking about the other. I'm only talking about Muslims. When it comes to Christians, well, would Eric Bowling want that test for Christians? Would Eric Bowling want Christians to say, I don't believe in biblical law before they run for office? Of course he wouldn't. You want to know why? Because he agrees with it. That's why. This is the same fucking network that was just defending Kim Davis, keeping gay marriage licenses away from gay people 24/7. All they did was defend Kim Davis all day long. And talk about how, well, she's a hero. Well, she's standing up for her beliefs, and it's her right to stand up for her God, and she says, these are my beliefs. I can't violate my beliefs. Then the second you take out the word Christian, put in the word Muslim, all of a sudden they're like, this is unbelievable. Can you believe that they want to make decisions based on their belief and their faith and their holy book? You can't make decisions based on God. Well, you got to be civilized here, secularism. You got to separate mosque and state, man. Come on, let's be serious. So they flip the standard based on what religion you're talking about, which is why intellectually I respect none of these people. None of these people. Guys, it's one thing if you disagree with me and you're consistent in your disagreement and you have standards and principles that you argue based off of. I love those debates. I love those conversations. I've had them before. I'll have them again. Libertarians, for example, I disagree with them, but they're principled. They're coming from a particular place and they're not going to contradict themselves. But when you talk about somebody like Eric Bowling and the Fox News idiots, and they start talking about faith, it all comes down to, is it the faith I was born into? Is it the faith that mommy and daddy taught me? Is it the voodoo nonsense bullshit fairy tale stories that were pumped into my head? Because if that's the conversation that we're having, then I want to be able to rule over everybody in society based on my God. But if it's the other, if it's a different religion, well, come on now, let's be reasonable. They got to distance themselves from Sharia. No, Eric, here's the way it should work. You ready for this? yes, any Muslim president should absolutely have to say, and they should believe. Of course I'm not going to advocate Sharia. This is politics. Politics is separate from religion. I'm 100% on that page, but I'm also 100% on that page for Christians, and you're not. I'm on the page for Christians where they should say, I'm not Rick Santorum, I'm not Mike Huckabee, I don't want the Christian Saudi Arabia, I'm going to allow gays to get married, I'm going to be in favor of secularism, I'm going to be in favor of civil liberties, I'm going to be in favor of reproductive rights. They should have to say all those things and believe in all those things, but you don't agree with that because you change the standard when it's fucking convenient for you, and that's why you're a joke. Okay. Now, let's finish up here with a story about dumbass teachers. There's an Oklahoma mother who's claiming that her 4-year-old son's teacher called him, quote, evil and sinister for writing with his left hand. That seems fucked up. So Huffington Post reports, Alicia Sands, 30 years old, said she asked her son, Zaid, who normally writes with his left hand, why he was using his right hand to complete his homework. And then the kid responded, well, my teacher said that the left hand is bad. Then they say, quote, when the concerned mom asked the unnamed teacher at Oaks Elementary School for an explanation, she was allegedly sent an article describing left-handed users as evil, unlucky, and sinister. The article cites the devil as one of the worst offenders of using his left hand. So Sands brought the issue to the school superintendent, but she says that no disciplinary action was taken against the teacher. Okay, yeah. Here's what should happen. Fire that teacher. I have no mercy on this. I know some people are going to say that's too harsh, and maybe have a conversation with her first or something. Sorry, guys. I would have to fire her. You want to know why? That person is crazy. That person is perhaps unsalvageably crazy. If you're so extreme in your beliefs that not only do you think left-handers are demonic, but you believe that so deeply that when you see a kid writing with his left hand, you say, you have to write with your right hand because you're going to be the devil. Well, then I can't have you around kids. You're not mature enough to be around kids. You're not sane enough or stable enough to be around kids and to be responsible for molding and shaping the minds of kids. This is crazy person speak here. Not only would I have to let her go, I would also hopefully get her some help. You know, figure out exactly what's going on here. Why do you believe these things that you believe? Do you hear voices in your head that tell you that, oh, it's the devil if they write with the left hand? Or is it just that you were brainwashed when you were a kid into a fundamentalist religious household and you believe the fundamentalist religion today to the point where you impose it upon others? Whatever the answer is, I'm sorry, but I can't have you being a leader around kids where you put your crazy ideology on them because you're breeding the next generation to be superstitious and to believe things that are untrue, and that's not healthy for anybody. So it might make me a dick. I would have to fire her, and shame on the school for not doing any disciplinary action. You're basically told, hey, one of the teachers has a few screws loose, and you say, eh, screws loose, whatever. It's not like they're shaping the minds of kids or anything. Oh, that's what they're doing? What? Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. Later.